Thanks so much for joining us, Kaya Ma, Deputy Premier of South Australia, speaking with Sam, Noah and myself, Emma. To start off, homelessness is quite a significant issue in the state. We've spoken to several people that have been experiencing homelessness and a number of advocates. Labor have promised 1,000 social homes, pledged $30 million to refurbish 300 housing trust homes. There have been criticisms from the Greens and housing advocates that this falls well short of what is needed. Will Labor commit to revisiting these targets?
We have committed and made a major investment, particularly in public housing. I think there's only been 1 year this century where we've seen an increase in public housing before this term of government. I reckon that was something like a couple of dozen houses in 2014. We've seen hundreds more added this term of government. We're committed to adding more. In addition to that, we're seeing significant increases for homelessness, the acute emergency response. Over the last term of government, we've seen an increase of $14 million, and we've pledged $6 million, particularly to organisations like Catherine House, St Vinny's, and the Hutt Street Centre, to make sure we are providing more funding. We've significantly increased the indexation that some of those service providers receive. But we know that there is still significant work to do. I think the last half of last year, we saw nearly 13,000 people access homelessness services. It is particularly acute when you have a rental market, as we're seeing now, as an exacerbation of some of those problems. So there has been significant investment, and we will see significant further investment.
If I can take you to the voice to parliament that you've got in South Australia. Now, it is nation leading in that space, but a lot of folks have been calling into question the effectiveness of it as a tool. As it's in its first 2 years, it's still finding its feet. How would you assess where the voice to parliament is as of 2026?
I'm really, really proud of that. As an Aboriginal person and as the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, it was heartbreaking to see the tenor of the debate during the referendum we had in 2020 and 2023. I'm really pleased that we had already legislated for our First Nations voice to parliament, the first of its kind anywhere in Australia. We've had the first elections almost 2 years ago, and we are in the middle of the second set of elections. They occur at the same time, so all the centres, all the voting centres are centres for the next First Nations voice to parliament election. There have been dozens of areas where we've received advice already from representatives from the First Nations voice. There have been a suite of legislation that we have changed because of the advice that we've received. I can give just one example of, I think, just how effective it already has been. And this is just as they're getting it set up in the first couple of years. Advice was given by our First Nations voice to parliament that meets a couple of times a year with cabinet, with chief executives, about many, particularly men who are in Aboriginal men in the remand centre, for no other reason than there's not an address to get to be bailed to, so that they're in the remand centre. We're now building a 30-bed bail facility that will have wraparound support services, so people who don't need to be actually locked up in remand have somewhere to be bailed to. It costs over $100,000 a year for a remand prisoner. So you're looking at well over about $3.5 million a year if you had those 30 people, Aboriginal men, on remand. It's going to cost less than half of that for the accommodation, this bail facility. So I think you're saving about $1.6 million a year by doing something that is better for the treatment and better for the well-being of the people who would otherwise be on remand. The whole voice costs $1.5 million a year. So just listening to that one single bit of advice has paid for the whole operations of the voice each year. So even if you're a right-wing economic rationalist, you should be in favour of the voice just for that one bit of advice, let alone everything else.
And it's been mentioned that this was kind of the first step towards treaty in South Australia. Now, we haven't seen heaps of movement on that front, and you've said that this takes time. Where is that heading?
Yeah, we started some discussions and looking internationally at what's happened. We previously have had treaty negotiations in South Australia. The last time Labor was in government under Jay Weatherall, I was also the Aboriginal Affairs Minister, and we had a treaty policy, and we started negotiation with Adyamathna, Noongar and Nurundjeri nations, and we signed the Butter Agreement in early 2018, the first agreement on a treaty course anywhere in Australia. We were very deliberate, and we took advice from Aboriginal leadership and Aboriginal communities. What we wanted to do first was the voice. We've received had some initial discussions with the voice about how we might restart treaty negotiations. That will certainly be, if we are fortunate enough to be re-elected, something that we hope to I don't think we would ever say that within the next 4 years there'll be full and final settlement as part of treaty discussions, but it's certainly something we hope to continue and make headway with over the next 4 years.
And another significant issue that has been affecting the South Australian community for around a year is the algae bloom, and that's obviously impacted First Nations communities, the broader public and coastal communities. Considering the revelations from Four Corners, do you admit that the algae bloom situation wasn't handled well?
Yeah, I haven't seen in, I've been at pre-polling booths all day. I haven't seen the promotion or the stories that I understand may form part of the Four Corners program tonight. But it was unprecedented. Yeah, it's not something we'd seen in Australia before. We'd seen it in places like California and Florida to have different nature, but different brevetoxins. But it's not something we'd seen here before. We followed pretty closely the advice of the scientists as to what we should do, but it was exceptionally unpredictable. We've committed for the summer plan more than $100 million, of which half of it's already gone out the door to help people, help businesses, help particularly the fishing industry. There's been First Nations input in relation to that. We've seen particularly Narunga and Narangeri contribute and put forward ideas. When you're dealing with something that hasn't happened before, you have to rely on the advice you're getting. That's what we did.
That obviously was somewhat unpredictable, but with reference to the segment on Four Corners, I understand that the waters tested positive for brevetoxin back in May 2025, but the health advice didn't actually change until September last year.
Yeah, as I said, as a government, it's not my portfolio area, but I know as a cabinet we relied on the advice we're getting. That's the scientific advice from particularly from SARDI, and also the health advice we're getting from the public health part of the health department.
Onto ramping, it was a major promise in the 2022 election and remains still an issue now. Labor's pledge to change the approach by investing in different longer term health infrastructure. Is this a guaranteed way to ease pressure on the health system in its current state?
Yeah, I've got to say that is probably collectively as a government one of the most frustrating areas of public administration. We have invested massively in public health, hundreds and hundreds of more hospital beds, thousands more of more health professionals, hundreds of doctors, many hundreds of nurses, many more ambulances, ambulance stations, more 24-hour crews. The one area that we've seen really significant improvements is on ambulances turning up on time for a lights and siren emergency. 4 years ago, there was a 2 in 3 chance an ambulance wouldn't turn up on the time that was set. That's reversed now. There's a 2 in 3 chance it will turn up. So, that is something that's changed. One of the really big frustrations is we know that a lack of aged care beds is really clogging up our system. There are many people, particularly who need memory support aged care beds, who would be better off for themselves. It would be better for the public health system if they had an aged care place. So that's something we certainly are working with the federal government, but it is exceptionally frustrating.
And you mentioned some of the frustrating and the nature of this, and something we've seen with the staffing aspect of healthcare, with some of the federal funded urgent care clinics, that some of the staff are being pulled into that and leaving some GP clinics in a bit of a dicey situation. The AMA have said that it's still in a bit of a crisis point for that. How do you actually get people to come to South Australia and stay working in the state in healthcare?
Yeah, certainly in some areas of health, our health professions, particularly in public health, we've seen massive increases in numbers in ambulance officers and nurses that we've been able to recruit. GPs, particularly in the private system, is that is a struggle, and it's particularly acute outside metropolitan areas in regional and remote South Australia to attract. And that is something that the training of GPs is something that is a federal government responsibility. But I know that Chris Picton, as our health minister, has been working very closely with Mark Butler, the federal health minister.
And I've spoken to particularly Dr. Prudence Flowers and other experts in far-right spaces who have raised significant concerns around trans rights and access to late-term abortion, which may be debated again. How do you think that these issues will play out in the new term if re-elected? How would Labor plan to address these sorts of topics and social policies?
Yeah, I've got to say there are a lot of people who get very worried about how other people live their lives. that's something that certainly I and I know all of my colleagues don't. People should just be who they are. We should accept people for who they are and love them for who they are. One of the things I've been really, really proud of this term of Parliament as Attorney General, I have passed a ban on conversion practices. So those sorts of really harmful medical or other sorts of interventions in a person's life to try and tell them who they are is evil or isn't right and causing great harm. We've now banned that in South Australia. My and all my colleagues' philosophy is let people live their lives, be who they are and be happy in their life.
So according to the latest Roy Morgan polls, One Nation's at 28%. The Liberals are at 16.5%. So I guess with this in mind, would Labor working with One Nation alienate voters?
We don't plan to work with One Nation in any circumstance. Yeah, we are aiming to, and we are optimistic about forming government in our own right. Yeah, there are so many areas we have fundamental disagreements on very, very fundamental policy areas with One Nation. We have made a very principled choice again at this election to put in all seats One Nation last on our how to votes. I know that the alternative government, the Liberal Party in South Australia, has made a choice to put One Nation quite high up on many of their preferences. I think that says everything to South Australian voters about the issue of One Nation, the sort of hatred that they espouse and push into the electorate.
Considering the changing media landscape and the rise of social media, can we expect to see further support for independent and community radio?
I think independent community radio is really, really important. I very fondly remember my time in the mid-1990s at Adelaide Uni Student Radio and participating with that. It is a really important part of our society and part of a whole range of voices that don't usually get heard.
We always talk about legacies of certain political parties and governments in and what they want to leave behind. We've already seen that South Australia has been able to inform federal politics and national politics through the social media ban. Do you think that there's scope to do that again? Is there some sort of area where you'd really love to lead the rest of the country?
Yes, absolutely. So the social media ban, I can distinctly remember I was at a family funeral in Newcastle at the time a few years ago and getting a call from the Premier who said, look, I've got an idea, Attorney General. This experiment we're doing on young kids with social media, their worth being determined by the algorithm that's served up by the social media company. Let's look at doing something about it. We then set about getting Robert French, the former Chief Justice of the High Court of Australia, to write a brilliant paper on how we could do it in South Australia. We then passed that on to the federal government, and we're really pleased when they took it up and had social media banned for children. And interestingly, it was last year that my office was contacted by Match Group. They're the world's biggest online dating apps company. About half of online dating apps are through this big company, Match Group. And they'd seen in the media the world-leading position we took on the social media ban for young people. And they wanted to talk to us about, were we interested in looking at ways we could help make dating apps safer for women who use them. So just in the last couple of days, after a lot of work, we've announced if we're re-elected, we will take a policy to ban dangerous predators, people who've got serious convictions for sexual offences, child sex offences and domestic violence offences from dating apps in South Australia. If people with these sort of convictions, 10 years after their conviction, use these apps, they will face up to 5 more years in jail. So that's a really interesting question because that sort of, when you make these changes and they're world-leading changes, it sort of builds that momentum and others come to you to look to make changes. So absolutely. So I'm really keen as Attorney General to look at the making dating apps safer. There are 200,000 South Australians who regularly use dating apps. About 50% of marriages today are formed for people who first met on an online platform. So I'm really, really proud to be part of a government and to work with the Premier who sees the power of government as something you should use. You don't not just sit back and manage from behind a desk, but if there are areas that we need to intervene, to absolutely do that.
just on the note of the social media ban, you know, what sorts of, I guess, comments or feedback have you had, you know, from interstate regarding that?
Yeah, it's been overwhelmingly positive. One of the really interesting areas that I've got a lot of feedback from is particularly from parents, not just appreciative that there is the ban, but it gives them a whole lot more power with their own children, you know, who want to do things, who want to, you know, be involved in these sort of things when the parents don't want them to. The parents, no, you actually can't do that. It's provided a whole lot more, you know, power and ability for parents to do things that they think are, you know, right by their children.
Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Excellent.
We can breathe.
Yes.